kicking off hour number three of Three and Out in the Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. About to talk Rick Barnes, Jalen Cohn, the future of the point guard position for Tennessee basketball. This segment brought to you by Gold's Gym. David, do you have the fitness tip of the day?
I do.
Is it a good one?
I was debating. See, I had two.
Okay.
And
you should probably try to sell it a little more, that it's a great one.
Well, it is a great one. Oh, I'm okay. Just having more of an internal battle of which great one I would like.
You want to go with two?
No.
No?
I don't want to.
You don't want to over-tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd hate to do that. Never want to over-tip. Rock your body.
I will say this one. Use exercise to boost your mood. Whenever you're able to work out, it is scientifically proven that it helps reduce stress.
Releases endorphins, too.
It does.
Plus, you just feel better about yourself.
Thank you. These are all facts. And so, whenever...
Look good, feel good, play good.
Exactly. I should just turn it over to you from here on out.
No, I'm just adding on to your fitness tip. It's good. It's a good tip. This is a good tip. You did a good job. Use exercise to boost your mood.
When you've had a rough day, going down to Gold's Gym, try running a little bit.
Hit the punching bag.
They do have a punching bag, and that's exactly, yep, that's what I'm going to say. You just take out all your stress.
They say that one's, like, if you're stressed out, like really stressed out, they say that punching bag will just do wonders for you.
If you actually want to just, like, an incredible workout, look up how boxing. Like
Tybo?
Hmm?
You probably don't even know what Tybo is.
I don't. Can't say that I do.
Billy Blanks?
But if you do.
Nothing?
I'm just going to go ahead and finish this.
Okay.
If we're good. You just do 3-minute rounds just on the punching bag. Make sure you move around. It'll wear you out like no other.
That's what Tybo was based on. A lot of fighting and punching.
We can talk about that after the show.
This is part of your fitness tip.
But if you're looking to boost the mood, get on over to your local Gold's Gym. Do some exercise. And as always, you can go online to goldsgym.com and download a free 3-day VIP pass. You can stop in, get a free tour anytime. Just tell them you heard about them right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out.
Is Jalen Cohn our official point guard next year?
It's a great question. And before we get right into that, I did have one final note on the mock drafts.
Okay.
I told you this off air, but the Athletics, Sam Vincini, he has rated the top 100 players for this year's NBA draft, and he has them on their draft board. He has Williams number 22 overall,
mm-hmm.
Schofield at number 33 overall.
Mm-hmm.
Bone was not in the top 100. And then, I mean, all this guy does is cover the NBA draft and the draft prospects, and he wrote that Bone would be ranked in the next 10 to 15 players after the top 100.
So somewhere in 101 to 115.
111 to 115. 10 to 15 players after the top 100.
So he's saying between 110 and 115, not just somewhere in the next 15.
Yes.
Yikes. Am I missing something on Jordan Bone? Like, did we just overrate him because he played so much better than he was last year? Like, am I wrong when we looked at statistics that he was not right up there with some of the best point guards in the country? Is this a name value thing because he kind of just burst onto the scene and wasn't a five-star freshman that did it?
Well, that doesn't help. But only having 1 year of just absolute great play, when you look at players getting drafted now.
And it being your junior year as opposed to your freshman year. Right?
Like last year, you didn't have... I'm trying to think back. I know for a senior, you did not have a senior in the top 20 draft picks last mm-hmm. year. Like that's kind of like how it started to be, to where people just go younger as far as who they're drafting. They try to get that way they can get the most out of you while they can.
Mm-hmm.
For Jordan Bone, like, I mean, I think he's a great player, but for, I guess, what the NBA execs are looking for.
I mean, he's a junior.
Yeah.
So he's got that extra year that we're at least kind of talking about. But I'm wondering, when you watch him play, he's not a fifth-year senior, right? He's not just so old that's the problem. Like, what am I missing? Is it the flat shot? Because I get it, it's a little flat. Are they worried about, like, NBA range because of the shot? Are they worried about it getting blocked? Is he I mean, I think he's plenty fast. I think he passes the ball well enough. He's gotten a lot better at attacking the rim. So what am I missing that has him outside of the top 100? I mean, hell, we had Jay Billis saying he's the best point guard in the SEC, one of the top 5 point guards in the country. He can't even make a top 20 point guard list right now. Well, is there behind the scenes off the court stuff that is like piling up against him that we just don't know about?
I'm pulling up his measurables right now because, like, I think that's kind of like maybe, I mean, what it's being boiled down to.
He's 6'3 or 6'4. He's plenty tall. He doesn't play as tall as I think he is, but speed, passing, vision, so much better this year. He's not like super skinny. I mean, he's not like a bulky guy, but I don't.
Do people just? I know we've seen a lot, but because of you having Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams on the team, are they just like, because those players are so well, it's just he's probably not that great. They just make him look better than he actually is. But I feel like you could make the argument for the exact opposite.
Yeah. The fact that he took this big of a step this year when everybody knew about those two guys, and those two did not really have huge drops in production. In fact, Grant went up. Admiral, even with the slump, was right around the same, maybe even better. But, I mean, he's 6'3", 175. Again, this past season, 13.5 points, 3 rebounds, almost 6 assists, shot 46.5% from the field. Am I just missing something? Luckily, we've got a basketball expert on the phone who wants to jump in. Philly's on here. He wants to tell us what he thinks of Jordan Bone. Like, Philly, what am I missing on Jordan Bone here, man?
Well, I think he's gone.
What? I think he's gone too, at least right now, but why does the NBA not like him at all? Like, these mock drafts, these ratings, like it's like he doesn't exist.
I don't know, but I imagine he's getting some bad advice by somebody.
I definitely think that's the case. I think maybe, I don't know if it's his brother or some friends or his immediate family. I don't know what his family's financial situation is, but it just seems like they are driving this to go get paid somewhere somehow. I mean, with all the good point guards dipping into the NBA, he could come back next year and be a premier point guard in college basketball. I thought he was at times this year, and that's with two of the best players in the country kind of stealing all the spotlight. If he comes back next year, I mean, it just seems like he'd have a really good opportunity to jump up all these boards.
Well, I think part of the problem is you know, he had that great game against Kentucky, then mm-hmm. after that he was very mediocre the rest of the year. I mean, in the NCAA tournament he was okay, nothing special. If he would have bowled up like he did against Kentucky in the NCAA tournament, I don't think there'd be no doubt he'd be drafted.
I mean, that Kentucky game was special, right? I mean, that was March 2nd, Tennessee wins 71-52. He goes 11 of 15 from the floor, 5 of 5 from three, did not shoot a free throw, dropped 27 points. He only had 3 assists that day, but that's because he was just the scoring machine himself. I mean, after that, Philly only had one single-digit game, and that was in a 16-point win against Mississippi State when he was dropping maybe the best pass I've ever seen on that through the crowd bounce pass to Kyle Alexander for the dunk. After that, he had 17 against Auburn, 14 against Mississippi State. He had another 18 against Kentucky in the SEC tournament. 11, 16, 14, 10. Never had more than 3 turnovers in any of those games. His assist numbers took a little bit of a dip.
Yeah.
And maybe that's it. Maybe they're looking at the assist numbers when the competition was NCAA tournament worthy and Kentucky and Auburn. I mean, he did drop 9 against Mississippi State, and I said it. Like, Mississippi State's not a bad team. They're just not good enough to be premier in the SEC. But 5 years ago, that probably would have been one of the best teams, if not the best team in the SEC.
Well, it's very perplexing, though. His defense is not very good as quick as he is. I mean, he may have great straight line quickness, mm-hmm. but he's not good from side to side.
Maybe that's it. Maybe they don't think he can defend in the NBA. Because I think offensively, I think he does everything right now that you would be looking for, but maybe that's it. I mean, they did throw Turner on the other best guard seemingly every game, and sometimes that left Jordan Bone still matched up against somebody pretty good. I need to, I guess, go deep dive his defensive numbers. I don't remember him being a liability, but that's the only thing I can think of. That, and he just kind of came on the scene late, but I still think he should be rated higher than 110 to 15
in the
country.
Well, I agree with you on that. I think he's better, but you know, there's a lot of people declared for the draft, you know, that are earlier than classmen than he is now. Like
sure,
Waters, is Waters a better player than him? I mean,
well, if it's close, he's younger,
is.
Right?
He probably is.
Yeah,
and yeah, he's a year younger.
And if it's close, he's the younger player.
Exactly, and he's got a better shot.
He does have a better shot.
And but you know, Cone's coming in, and this Oliver Robinson, whatever his last name is coming in for an official visit. So they're expecting some those two guys to go into the NBA, or there's going to be some more attrition that we don't know about.
It seems like the Jalen Cone plan is the, if Jordan Bone definitely leaves, we need to have an option. Like,
oh, yeah, Lamonte Turner got that bad shoulder. I mean, there's no guarantees Lamonte Turner's going to be 100% next
sure.
year.
I'm glad that they're trying to get that surgery done now instead of waiting, you know, kind of into the summer. It seemed like that's what they did last year, and they didn't really give him enough time to recover. I want to say they waited a few months, Philly, last year to have this surgery. I'll have to go back and check. But, I mean, based on the tweets that Lamonte Turner sent out and a couple of his teammates, sounds like that shoulder was a problem all year.
Yeah.
You know, they kept saying – it, you know, I think I can remember Rick Barnes a few times saying it's not physical, it's mental. He just has to get over the fact that, you know, he had a procedure done, and now it sounds like no, that was a big issue, you know, comfort wise all year for him. But I'm with you. If you look at next year for, you know, the point guard position, let's say you don't get Cone, Bone declares, and Lamonte Turner's not 100% healthy and or capable of running point for the whole year. Whew, like what do you do? Like start, you move Bowden over there?
No, you put Isaiah James at the point. That's what you have to do.
You'd have to, right? Like you'd have to
yeah.
just go point forward. You'd
yeah.
have to do what we did with Tobias, except you'd have to do it a lot more than we did it.
And I also, well, that's why I'd recruit another guard anyway. I can foresee Tennessee going four guards next year.
I mean, based on what you have on the inside, it seems like that would be your strength, right?
Yeah.
And then just get up and down as much as you possibly can. Like, I'm not saying go Auburn, but you'd probably try to mimic a little bit of what they did. I've said it for the last couple years. Like, the way the three-point shot has changed the game, like, I want to be that team that's taken, you know, 27, 28, 33s a game and trying to hit that 12 to 17 number. Because
yeah.
it's just the equalizer. I mean, you saw – and then if the other team's struggling, I mean, you saw what – Auburn and Pearl did to a couple of really, really good teams. What they did to North Carolina, like, shouldn't be shown on television again. Like, that
well,
was
you don't have,
abuse.
You don't have to have, yeah, you don't have to have the biggest post players in the
no.
world either. I mean, mm-hmm. Auburn's post players aren't that big.
No, I mean, they were super good. Okiki, by the way, I don't know if we said this on Friday's show, but Okiki did declare for the draft for Auburn. So they're losing a ton. But, yeah, I mean,
he's going to be a late first round, early second round,
even
coming
with
off the
knee,
ACL
right.
injury.
So that's another guy to bump a Tennessee player or two down the list. But, yeah, the Jordan Bone situation is just fascinating to me. I don't know what people are missing or maybe what I'm missing when I break down his you know, kind of game. But if he declares and for some reason you don't get Cone, that visit with him coming up is a big one. And then whether or not he's willing to reclassify and come in this summer, I mean, there's a chance that he loves his visit and still says, nah, I want to go be a senior for a year.
Well, I think I'm pretty sure that's what he's going to do. He's going to reclassify, and I'd say Tennessee's probably one of his top two choices. I mean,
it seems like it right now.
We've had some other teams join the discussion that have gave him the option to reclassify for their class if he would like as well.
Seems like Texas A&M with Buzz Williams will be Tennessee's number one competition for him.
He's going all in as far as having Buzzes and. I mean, Virginia Tech's another school that's making a run at him because Buzz was heavily recruiting him while he was at Va-Tech, and now that he's at Texas A&M, Texas A&M's coming hard, and Wake Forest as well.
Well, Tennessee is the best team out of all those that are listed to get him. I mean, and you got opportunities to come out in and maybe even start a point guard your first year.
Yeah, a really good shot. I mean, you're certainly going to be in the rotation because my guess is Philly – ideally, they would do a little bit of what they did last year, especially if it's Cone, where you see and I'm assuming Lamonte's healthy in this scenario, but you'd see kind of a little bit of a split of duty there. Like sometimes we're going to run with Cone at the one and Lamonte at the two, and then we'll switch it. And then I'd be surprised if you didn't see Bowden at least get a few, you know, a few stretches next year where they're letting him bring the ball up the court. Like he's a guy who could really use some development in ball handling. And this seems like the just because you don't know exactly where you're going to be at the start of the season with health or with personnel, it seems like right now if I'm Rick Barnes and I'm this coaching staff, I'm looking at Bowden and I'm like, hey, buddy, we got to get your ball handling up because you're probably going to have to run some point at some point.
Well, I say Josiah James is going to play point guard even if he plays defensively at the three position.
I think you're probably going to need him defensively at the three. Yeah. Or the four, honestly. I mean, he's athletic and tall enough to do it.
Four. I mean, if they go four guards, that's very possible. And this Devontae Gaines, he's got talent. He's as skinny as a rail.
Right,
but,
yeah.
You know, they're going to play him anyway, it looks like, because I'm going to handle confidence in Jalen Johnson, do you?
No, and I want to, Philly. I really do. I'm sure you've heard it, but apparently he just dominates in scrimmages. Like even when Admiral and Grant and everybody else was out there, like he would just drop, you know, 20, flying all over the place, hitting shots, dunking. But man, he gets in a game, and it's like someone just presses the panic button, because he had multiple games where he comes in and either trips and falls or just throws it directly to the other team. He gets stuck flat-footed on defense. I don't know if when he gets in there, if it's nerves, if he's overthinking, maybe he can shake that and find some confidence this offseason. I mean, he's got a shot. Like, you can see his ability to score. But, man, like, what game was it? Was it Purdue when he goes in overtime and he has his hand on three rebounds and loses all of them?
Yeah.
That's not a skill thing. Like, I know he has the skill to grab a loose ball. That's a I'm nervous and I'm not comfortable in what I'm doing.
You want it enough. I mean, that's part of it. Well, guys, I'll get off here. I appreciate y'all being nice to me because, you know, the afternoon crew's not very nice. See you.
Philly, you're welcome here anytime, buddy. Thanks for the call. So, Cone is coming on a visit and has already had the in-home with Rick Barnes. Is that correct?
According to Rocky Top Talk, this was posted on Saturday. Rick Barnes and his staff, let me find it. Yeah, Tennessee Rick Barnes will now have an in-home visit tomorrow morning with four-star junior Jalen Cone. So that would have been on Saturday. And then continues Texas A&M's Buzz Williams will conduct his in-home a few hours after that.
When was this written?
Saturday.
So
Sunday. Sunday was when the visit would have been yesterday.
Okay. That's what I was checking on.
Yeah.
So Rick Barnes had his visit yesterday, and Buzz Williams went in right after Rick.
Yeah. And Wake Forest will have their entire staff conducting an in-home visit with four-star Jalen Cone. That would have been on Saturday.
Okay. So the in-homes are complete at this point.
So what it looks like.
For those who are unfamiliar, Jalen Cone, class of 2020, is
5'11 point guard, ranked 83rd in the 24/7 composite.
I don't love the 5'11, but I do think at this point the options are going to be very limited if you're wanting a freshman point guard with his type of ranking and skill. This would be a pretty big get, don't you think?
Oh, it'd be huge. Like,
I mean, I haven't like broken down the tape on Jalen Cone, but just to go pull a last-second four-star, top 100 type player, obviously reclassifying, he's probably going to be, you know, when they do this, they typically drop in the rankings because established guys are going to get a little bit more pub. But I think the ability to go pull a late four-star like this would again prove, hey, Rick Barnes, the recruiting is starting to change. It's on the uptick. The Josiah James running point, I mean, that's what he ran for his high school. Now, granted, when you're the best player in your high school's conference and probably in your entire region, yeah, they're probably going to want the ball in your hands as much as possible. I wonder what the recruiting pitch was to him, because that's how you got Tobias Harris, is you told him, you're going to run the point four. You're going to bring the ball up the court. You're going to get us into our offense. And then you're going to be playing, you know, positions one through four, and we're essentially going to isolate you as much as we can and get you shots. It's what Pat Summitt did with Candace Parker, one of the reasons she wanted to come here. Like, it works for players that are that big but also have that level of skill. I'm with Philly. Like, I think he could do it. I just don't know what the plan is. Because I think we all agree Lamonte Turner was good at the one last year. He's more suited for the two.
And
we know that, you know. Josiah, Bowden is a two or a three.
Josiah can run the point, but I think if you're wanting to get him at his best, that's probably not ideal. And if you bring in Cone, you're able to shift Turner over. You can still kind of, if you want, you can still bring Bowden off the bench, which I think we've seen works better for him.
Not next year. Not at least not initially for me. I'm going to start him again like he did this year, and then just see. And if you need to bring him off the bench, that's fine. But hopefully, another year of maturity of playing, I'm hopeful you can just start Bowden.
I mean, I'm just trying to like look at potential lineups. Like,
I mean,
I think if you don't get Cone, I think you have to. I think.
Oh yeah, if you don't get Cone, you're definitely going to have to. And if you do, I mean. I love Eve Ponce, but if he can't start to develop some offense, I just don't see the need. Just because we don't know what we're going to get with Burns,
yeah,
right? You don't have Admiral out there. You don't have Grant out there. Like, you're going to need people who can score, because I don't think the defense is suddenly going to get better once you lose Grant and Admiral. And I just worry that with Ponce out there, man, you're really limiting yourself as far as putting the ball in the basket. And hell, let's not... Like, there's a chance that Fulkerson beats out Burns. Like, there's a chance that he's your starter at five. Again, I don't think that's ideal, but there's a chance. If Fulkerson's your starter at five, do you really want Ponce at the four? You can't, man. Like, there's no baskets.
In today's age, you have to have bench production. And if I don't know where that's going to come from, if you're having
that doesn't
to
mean you start your worst players, though.
No. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, like, if you're able to have a system to where you're able to bring Bowden off the bench, like, at least have something to work out to where you're able to have some sort of a spark plug. If the starters are off slow, you can bring somebody in pretty quickly. And I feel like Bowden, that's what he does. I don't know if it's a head thing whenever he does start, but he was always slower in games whenever he was on the court to begin with.
This year, I agree. Last year, that was not necessarily the case.
True.
Last year, he started the whole season.
So, if you get Cone, he's not a one-and-done player. He's good enough to where he's going to start for you for a couple of years. I will say he's from Walkertown, North Carolina. We talk about Rick going into his own backyard and go there.
Right?
That's only a 20-minute drive to Wake Forest. So I don't know if he's looking to stay close or if he's looking to get far away, but Wake Forest is by far the closest big-time school in his area. But, I mean, like, with what Danny Manning's got going on right now, like, I don't know necessarily why you'd want to go play there unless you just you love
they
it.
They would have fired him if it wouldn't have cost them, like, $16 million.
Yeah. I mean, like... This is kind of, it's a little bit different just based off the programs, but I mean, kind of like Dabo Swinney coming into our backyard and just stealing people left and right.
Thanks for that reminder. I appreciate that.
I'm just trying to give an analogy of what it would be like for us just to kind of go into their own backyard and take their best player that they've had come out of that area in a while.
Speaking of backyards, and you mentioned Virginia Tech, is there any movement? Have we heard any whispers or rumblings on Tennessee trying to get in with the...
I have not heard anything about Tennessee trying to get Kerry Blackshear. I don't know if they think it's probably just a lost cause. At this point, he's got like all the top programs kind of coming at him. So if there's any tie whatsoever, Kentucky wants him bad. And that would be devastating because we don't have anybody who can guard him. I hope he just goes pro at this point. Cuz if you're looking at the other programs that are actually that it seems like are going to be able to make a play for him, Tennessee's probably going to have to play him next year if he comes back to college. And that's not a good thing.
Ross Homan, NBA draft analyst from Columbus, Ohio, tweeted this last week. I don't know if this is inside info or if this is just him saying it would be a good fit, but two teams I'd watch with Kerry Blackshear are Texas Tech in Tennessee. Tennessee offered him out of high school, and Kyle Alexander is graduating. I didn't realize that we had offered him out of high school. Texas Tech, he would just go and be the next Tariq Owens for them, right? But much more skilled and a better score.
No, he's at Texas A&M, right?
Texas Tech.
Oh, Texas Tech?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I figured A&M because he played for Buzz at Virginia Tech, and I heard they had a good relationship.
Oh, you think he might just follow him there?
He's a grad transfer and going to be able to play immediately.
That'd be a big get for Buzz Williams.
I don't know like how much turnover they're going to have at A&M if there's a good roster in place. Like, I don't know enough about their current situation to know whether that's a program you want to go to right now. Because if you're Kerry, you feel like you got 1 year, you want to go somewhere you can win and at least have a chance to kind of come out on top, win a conference championship, something like that.
I mean, if you're him and you're, let's just Tennessee hypothetically, and you're looking at this roster, aren't you thinking, well, I'm starting immediately, and I'm probably putting somebody on the bench to start the game that's not going to score. I'm going to be the number one option at the five.
If you get Grant Williams to come back and you bring him,
I mean, he's
you should win the SEC.
Yeah, like
the, hands down.
He's like a Kyle Alexander on steroids. Like he's that big and just way better.
I'm trying.
It would completely change. I mean, all of a sudden, instead of going, oh yeah, we're gonna be like, even if at that point, if Grant comes back, I'm saying, if you lose Bone and add Cone and Blackshear, I mean, with Josiah James, you're feeling really, really. It changes the complete like outlook right now because we're just in this anonymity of what are we going to look like at the start of next season.
I'm trying to think of a good comparison for Tennessee fans to kind of be able to wrap their head around as far as how good this guy is. I guess the closest, and this is from this year, think Reed Travis from Kentucky, but he's a lot better than Reed Travis.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could see he made a big difference for how that team played when he was on and versus when he wasn't able to play.
I'm trying to think of another big in the SEC that reminded me of him.
Yeah, I can't think of any grad transfers recently that could just kind of come in and make an impact.
Regardless of him being a grad transfer, I don't know, man. He's actually a little bit more built than I thought. He might be like a taller PJ Washington.
You good there?
Yeah, it's just my alarm going off. It's 9:30. It's time for a break. That's what that meant. Come on, Rick. We got to get in with Blackshear. Plus, it's a cool last name. Very Game of Thrones-esque. House of Blackshear. Welcome back. 3 and Out. Fan Run Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. Houston Crest. Davey Hudson. Julia Ramsey. Running the board. Smashing out the hits. This is like the greatest pump-up song of all time. One of them. Shouts out to Varsity Blues. I'm so stuck on Jordan Bone. I cannot figure this out. I can't figure out why he's so low, and I can't figure out why he's so dead set on going if he's so low.
We can do some more digging after the show to try to like do a stat deep dive, because I know
the stats are good, is there any like scout analysis out on him? Like, is there any? Here's a list of what he does well and what he does poorly and why maybe he isn't higher on boards. And I also am so intrigued by why he's so gone.
Yeah.
At least seemingly. Like, Philly mentioned it. Like, is this bad advice? Is that what this is? Is this people in his ear telling him, no, it's fine. Like, you're going to wow him at the combine. No, stay in the draft. One team's going to fall in love with you. And if he doesn't go to the combine, like, is this a thing where is he just going to go through the draft no matter what if he doesn't get invited to the combine? Or is there at least a chance he reconsiders the decision to come back next year? It seemed like he enjoyed playing this year. Did he just love Admiral and Kyle and Grant, and he's worried about coming back and not having those three around? Like, okay, my production – yeah, I could come back and get better on the court, but my production might actually go down because I won't have as much talent around me.
Could be worried about that. I mean, if you
go get Blackshear, like, does that help with Bone? Like, is that at least put a bug in his ear? Like, hey, yeah, you can go, or you can come back, and it's going to be a new team, but we've still got talent. Josiah James is going to give you a lot of assists. Grant's going to give you a lot of assists, and now this Blackshear, assuming Grant comes back, obviously, and now Blackshear is going to be able to give you a lot of assists. Not to mention if Lamonte Turner gets healthy and Bowden gets healthy, you're going to have guys that can shoot or you can drive and kick it out to them. Like, all the options are going to be open for you, Jordan Bone. Or is this a case of family, agents, friends saying, nah, man, get that money? Does he just hate college that much?
I don't know, man. Trying to do a stat deep dive real quick for advanced analytics on Jordan Bone defensively. His defensive plus minus is -0.2, So he gets scored on per box score estimate of the defensive points per 100 possessions a player contributed. So basically what that means is the only players worse than him defensively on the team this year were Lucas Campbell and Jacob Fleshman.
Well, I guess that's it then, huh? Can't defend?
Doesn't look like it. Jalen Johnson's defensive ratings were better than Jordan Bone's.
It seems impossible. No offense. Did it ever feel like that when we watched him? Do you ever remember thinking, oh man, Jordan Bone, liability defensively?
I didn't think that, but the fact that we were having to put Lamonte on their best defender at times, I was just like, I mean, not to take a shot at Lamonte, but I felt his defense was subpar for a good part of the season. And I'm like, if we're having to have him guard the best players, like, why don't we try to put Bone? But I guess, I mean, if you look at these numbers, it's probably because Bone was going to be worse than Lamonte if you put him on him. Now, I thought Lamonte really picked it up the second half of the season, especially in the tournament play.
Wow. I mean, I guess that's it. And maybe that's something you don't think you can get better at in a year. Like, I don't have lateral quickness. I'm not going to get faster defensively next year. I mean, that's what Philly said. Like, maybe he just can't go side to side, which you have to be able to do to guard. Okay. So then, like, if you're not going to get drafted, like, what's the difference? Other than you start your climb to the NBA now instead of next year. But is it not possible he could get a little bit better defensively next year?
Yeah, he could.
I mean, the year before this, was he that bad defensively?
Give me a second. I'll pull up last year's.
Like, did he just take a huge dip in his defensive plus minus? I did not recall watching Jordan Bone play and think, oh, man, he is just getting worked. In fact, I felt like a lot of times he was pretty good.
He was at 1.5 last year per 100 possessions, so it was better.
That's a big dip, though.
It's still like...
almost 2 points.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it really is that simple. He just got worse defensively, and people are worried he can't defend in the NBA. But if he... I don't know. I mean, if he's so much better scoring the basketball. I mean, think about that, too. Think about how his offensive numbers jumped so much, and his... efficiency still went down. That means he must have gotten significantly worse defensively. But man, like, I just felt like that would show up more often. I never remember watching him play thinking he's getting absolutely worked over right now. Especially, like you mentioned, because we put Turner on the other team's best guard 90% of the time when he was healthy.
That's got to be it. It's just they look at, they don't think he can defend at the next level.
He did a good job against Hagans three times against Kentucky.
Hagans is extremely overrated.
Especially when he plays against Jordan Bone, but he's getting all the love right now.
He's coming back.
I saw that. Saying nationally, yeah. They're like, oh, this guy. I mean, remember
but
all
that
the,
was, yeah, but that, he was just such a highly
tweets?
Touted recruit.
Still. Speaking of highly touted recruits, did I hear you say during the break that Kentucky missed one?
Yes, they did. I actually, like, as far as this year's recruiting class, this is the guy that I've kind of been the most interested in following. His name's Matthew Hurt. He is out of Minnesota, but he's a stretch four, and this kid can just knock down the ball from pretty much anywhere. So, I mean, he's 6'9", 215 pounds, but he can step out and shoot, and he would be a matchup nightmare for us if he was to go to Kentucky. So he announced on Friday.
Josiah James couldn't lock him down?
This guy's got 3 inches on Josiah. I don't know. He's not the most physically imposing guy, but I mean, he's not really a guy that tries to. He can drive, but he's according to 24/7, he's the ninth best player in the country, number two power forward overall.
And he's not going to Kentucky.
Not going to Kentucky.
Boom. Where is he going?
He's going to Duke.
Oh, shut up. Is that what this was?
It wasn't the intention.
A victory lap for Duke?
No,
But you tricked me into a shot
I'm
at
telling
Kentucky?
You're not going to have to play this guy, and you better be thankful.
Is he really that good, or is it just now that he's going to Duke, you're making yourself believe that
player.
He's good?
No, he's a top 10 player in the country.
I mean, yeah, but like, it's not the same year in and year out.
I think he's great because he has the exact same style of play as Ryan Kelly. Ryan Kelly was a highly touted 5-star coming out of high school who always had a shot, and it just makes the defense have to really adjust how they're playing. Like, they're going to have to expand out. And if you've got a center that's able to really just go one-on-one, which Duke will also have coming in, it's going to open the entire court.
Okay. I now know exactly what you were doing here.
I'm thrilled he's not going to Kentucky. Because Calipari
tried
to have...
I think you're thrilled about where he is going.
Calipari tried to have an in-home visit with him last Sunday, and he's like, no.
Okay, well, I do like that.
See ya.
I do like that part. That part's good. I can handle that. But I still feel like this was just a little Duke victory lap.
Well, here's where I wanted to make the tie-in for a scouting report.
Okay.
Brian Snow of 24/7 put out a projection of where he'll be. He's like, he's going to be a first-round pick next year. Do you want to know who his NBA comparison is?
Sure.
Tobias Harris.
Hmm. Okay.
But he's got a better shot at that time coming out of high school. Tobias was a lot stronger. But as far as the style and, like, he can take the ball up the court. I mean, if you got a guy who's 6'9", who can bring it up the court, it's pretty good.
All right. You really brought the segment down with the Duke love.
No, it was the Kentucky hate.
I think you masked it as that. You need to be better. But at least you did tie in Tobias Harris. Like, that. Like, good job.
I told you it wasn't a Duke segment.
It felt like it was kind of a Duke segment. One segment remains. We're going to talk about Game of Thrones. If you haven't watched last night's episode, we're going to try to avoid spoilers. This is more just a 10,000-foot view overarching response to last night's episode that Roberto thinks is top 10 all time. I do not have a top 10 all time. It might be bottom 10 all time. Talk about it next. Last segment, 3 and out. Final segment, 3 and out. Fan Run Radio. We're talking Game of Thrones. General thoughts. We don't want to give anything away, but if you haven't watched last night's episode, there's a chance a spoiler pops out, so just be aware. If you want to turn your radio off, I completely understand.
All right, I'll lead with this question. Did you like last night's episode better than the season premiere?
Yes, I did. And I've hated them both. But I did like this one better. There's slightly less hate on this one than the first one. I would give this episode like a 3.8 out of 10.
I guess in the summation, I don't necessarily think this would be much of a spoiler. Would you call it kind of like the gearing up for the game? Like the calm before the storm.
Well, I thought that's what I thought the first episode was going to be.
They ended up doing
the same thing, but a little bit like the first episode of this season. You saw the strands,
yeah,
and now we've started to spin them together. It just seems like we didn't need to waste 2 episodes and over 2 hours to get to this point. I can agree with that. I realize you probably can't start out the season with the battle of all battles. I totally understand that. Still feel like Cersei was not even in the damn episode last night. Like, we know she's doing something sinister down there, and we didn't even get a glimpse.
We didn't leave Winterfell, did we?
No. Not once. This episode really felt like we spent all of our money on the battle scene. Let's just have everybody in. There were no special effects in this episode. There were no dragons. There were no aerial flyovers of, you know, cities that we hadn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, there was nothing added or extra. It was cool because it was all the characters that we've gotten to know over the last few years. They just didn't do anything. And when they did things, I didn't need to know they were doing those things.
Maybe the HBO executives are thinking, well, they're not even going to remember these 2 episodes after what we're about to give them.
Okay.
And so we know, as far as the budget, we have gone all out for what is to come. And, I mean, it's going to end in a bang one way or another.
Yeah.
So we knew it was going to be short anyway as far as the number of episodes. Granted, they added a extra 40 minutes, it seems like, to
the final episode.
The final 2 episodes, yeah.
It's just like what happened last night that like really drove the story forward?
It's more of
was learning. It just like a reintroduction to everybody? It's like, okay, we've been following them in like separate places and separate episodes and separate seasons, and now they're all here, and it's just kind of a here's what everybody's doing right before the biggest fight of all time.
Yeah, they're giving you the idea that.
Are they trying to like create humanity here? Like see the human side of these people?
Yes, they're wanting to make the connection. They're wanting to make the connection even bigger and hurt the audience even more once a lot of these people end up basically dying in the ultimate battle.
Because you now have like different emotions towards everybody who's at Winterfell, right?
Yes.
I mean,
well, like you're not gonna like. Since everyone's kind of on the same side of just the living, and the people that are at least at Winterfell now aren't really worried about past events in their life.
Yeah, they've all thrown that aside. They're like, we got to worry about this now. So I'm with you, and I did like that aspect. And maybe next week I'll look back on this episode and say, you know what, like we need that. Yeah, like it did really help to hurt me when I watched episode 3. But man. I was just like, can somebody do something? They just sat around a fire and drank wine for an hour and a half.
Yeah, you had a few more instances of people telling other people stuff the audience already knew.
Right, which, I mean, I get that it like had to happen, mm-hmm. but it's like we're taking a long time to catch the characters up with what we already know.
Yeah, I mean, and some people aren't going to like that. I understand why they're doing it. I think there's other ways they could have gone about doing it that was more interesting. But I have a feeling everyone's just going to forget about these two episodes once next Sunday
maybe
starts.
Maybe. I just, man. We know how much has to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so far in two episodes, nothing has happened.
They've kind of set the scene for how the season will end. The series, really, in general.
It's weird. Like, you think so, and then there's, like, weird little teasers, and then weird little, like, one-off, like, when Bran said, you know, how do you know there will be an after this, or whatever the exact phrasing was, and you're kind of like, oh, does he know something? But then he, like, volunteers himself for a pretty important role in the battle and offers...
I did like the battle preparation scene.
Yeah, that was cool. I liked all that. I liked that they put the dragon glass all over the spikes and stuff like. I mean, they're showing you like, hey, we're trying. But does it not seem like Bran has a lot more information that he could have shared? I mean, like it starts at the snap of your fingers next week. They're going to start next week's episode, by the way, in King's Landing. I have no doubt about this. We're going to have to just sit and dangle on a hook for at least the first 20 minutes of this show because we didn't get any Cersei. They're going to totally start with Cersei next week. But man, it just seems like Bran knows an awful lot, and like they're right on the other side of the hill. This would probably be a good time to share all the information that you have, past, present, and future, to see if just maybe we can come up with some plan better than, well, we're gonna wait for them and then fight them. What? Like that's our plan?
I don't know what the rule is on the three-eyed raven. Being able to distribute information at will.
Is it unwritten rules? Sorry, guys. I would love to save humanity. I mean it. I just can't. Like, I'm the three-eyed raven now. I can't just help everyone. Sorry. He did have the line of the show, though. The things we do for love. Oh, Jaime Lannister just getting slapped around by a guy who can't even reach him. I mean, don't get me wrong. The episode had some really good parts, some good moments. Like, I made fun of them sitting around the fire drinking wine, but I imagine that in real war and real battle, I mean, that's probably pretty accurate. Like, we're all just going to sit around and realize what's coming and sing a song, thanks to Podrick, which was also something. The singing. And then Tormund's story. What? Again, I guess it's just the humanity aspect of all this. Maybe. It just felt like, you know, we kind of need something to happen. And nothing really happened. What would you, do you have a rating for the episode? Was that like a six out of 10 guy?
It's the middle of the pack. Like, I didn't think it was like one of the worst ones I've ever seen, but it's definitely not going to like crack my top 10. I think just the anticipation of so much for next week made me dislike it a little more than I probably would have
Danny Boy tweets in, and I think he might be right, and maybe they just didn't show it. He said he thinks Tyrion probably got a lot of info from Bran when they had their conversation. That's what I was hoping for when he pulled up the chair next to Bran, and we didn't get it. But maybe, just maybe, we'll learn a little bit more about that conversation next week.
We'll talk more Westeros Wednesday.
Westeros Wednesday. Give it a couple days. Sink in. Read some reviews. Things like that. Davey, thank you for filling in for Nate. You did a great job.
Thank you. Julia
crushed it. Julia, what was your rating for that episode, by the way?
Middle of the pack. I'd say six.
Five or six. All right. Talk Sports is next. This has been 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio.